Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
His name is Michael Lasorda. I talked to Michael once before. Actually, I found out about him because I thought, this is fascinating what this guy does. He's got a thing called the Believe It Tour, and he travels all over the place and investigates, which I would love to do. I mean, most of us, I think, would just love to go and find out about mysteries. And then, you know, he documents them. He takes a very scientific approach to them. He's a laid-back guy, but it sounds like he has a lot of fun in life. Michael Lasorda is in Connecticut. How you doing, Mike?
Doing good. And long time it's been since I talked to you last, but sounds like we catch right back up.
Yeah, it's. I think you and I are both on the same path as far as finding answers. When did you first start to get this feeling that this was something you wanted to do? Has this been your whole life?
Well, I wouldn't say it's been my whole life. I grew up in Michigan, so that's one thing we have in common. But I grew up down in Detroit area, and you know, just like any other kid, you have monster stories and things like that are always very cool, and see things, and you know, there's ghost stories that I have from as a kid, and always loved the campfire story, and
right,
that
yeah.
was so that didn't necessarily send me off to be a cryptozoologist like right away, but years later, after school and college and a little bit of working, I was out in California and was able, I'm a graphic designer, and I was up in Northern California in the Redwoods doing a photo shoot, art directing a photo shoot for a client, and I was like, hey, this is supposed to be where Bigfoot comes from or is. So I started looking into it in my free time while I was up there, and I heard some stories from some locals and got the bug, you know, just got bit. From there, I thought, okay, this is kind of interesting. So I started taking every weekend opportunity that I could to drive back up to Northern California from San Diego and getting a little more into it, researching a little more, and it grew from there.
Did you ever see anything?
Which area you want to talk about? Because if you want Bigfoot, I've never seen a Bigfoot. I've seen some pretty big prints in the mud. In Oregon, I saw a huge one that I can't explain. There's been several more, less detailed ones, more like in the snow and things in Washington. Seen some strange ones in Pennsylvania and Ohio. But nothing, you know, had sense of being followed, and heard the wood knocking that you hear a lot about now with all the TV shows
right. kind of
promoting that. So all that, but never have never seen one to say, oh my God, there's a Bigfoot.
Yeah, they're not going to come up to you and probably go, hey, how's it going? They're not going to say, hey, by the way, I'm Sass. My friends call me Sass. I'm a Sasquatch.
Yeah. So that's a whole other, I can probably talk hours and hours on that. Some really good ghost stories of things I've seen from very clear.
Have you ever been around something that you would think was like a real dark energy? Have you ever been in a place like that?
Yeah, well, there's a place in Ohio that we investigated, and I was with a local paranormal group there, and we went in, and this, at one point I'd left, this big, huge shadow thing came after us, like very slowly and aggressively started moving towards us, and it just, the energy in the room was negative. Everything about it was nothing like I'd ever experienced before, and I didn't want anything to do with it, so I cut out. Whether I was called a chicken or not, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But that one was probably the worst. In the trip to Alaska that I was kind of telling you about before when we were just chatting, Diana, my wife, who's also travels with me, she had an entity kind of rush her, and actually she felt it push her. And this was in Fairbanks, Alaska, at a great paranormal group up there took care of us and took us down a couple of investigations. So that I didn't feel anything in there. I saw like some movement, figure in a shadow type movement in a room. There's a couple of us that saw it, but I did not sense anything like Diana did. But that one supposedly was, it was in a Masonic lodge, an old Masonic lodge, and it was on the upper floor, and supposedly that the women were not allowed up there, and when Diana went up there, that's when she had that happen, so we're thinking that may have had something to do with it.
Yeah, that's right. What is a woman doing in here? You should say, hey, you know what? It's the 21st century. Hello. We're not.
Well, that it's interesting. So in Alaska, I don't know if you've been there, but it's not too different from the UP. Everybody sort of is, you know, they fish and hunt, and guns are a big part of their life just because if you walk out your door, there's usually a bear there waiting for you. So everybody is very into that sort of thing. So this Masonic Lodge actually had a shooting range in the basement, and they were having a party of some kind. Kids were down there or whatever, and there was an accident, and a child was actually killed in the basement there. And that's who most of the activity that they get is from that.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And do you do anything, because, you know, I've been in situations where I've done some cleansings for people, you know, with some other people. Do you do anything to protect yourself when you go into those facilities?
Yes, we actually, you know, because of what we do and where we travel, we've met a lot of people, and you hear different things and different techniques. But one thing that everybody always says is, when you go into these places, when you leave, to kind of make it known that you're not to be followed, and to, you know, leave you alone, sort of thing. So that's something we always practice, and we always try to be respectful in areas. And this goes for not just like paranormal investigations, but everything in general. We try to respect, you know, the local folklore or the legends or nature, whatever it might be, and try to, you know, good karma is good karma, right?
Right. Are you ever truly afraid when you enter into something?
That time in Ohio, I think that was pretty, pretty close. The first Bigfoot print that I saw, or footprint in the mud I saw, was a little. It kind of everything that led up to that was, you know, in your head. You know, you're thinking about it. Oh, sure, this could exist. And then when I actually saw that, and it was so defined and so right in your face, and you're in the middle of the woods in Oregon and miles away from anything because you've hiked back in, and you see that, it was pretty, I wouldn't say scary, but it was, I don't even know what the word would be, you know, a reality, sort of reality hit. So even though I didn't see anything, it made it more real to me that it could be a possibility that a creature like that does exist.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm very open-minded, and I say I believe these things, and some of these things I've seen that we've talked about. But until you actually see it, you know, there's always that little part of the subconscious that goes, well, I don't know, you know? And then, like, I know exactly what you're saying. And then when it happens, it's like the first time I saw an apparition. I've always believed in spirits, and they've had contact with me. But when you see an apparition, it's like, okay, they're for real, and I know they're for real. Or if you see, I don't know if you've ever seen an alien or a being from another place, but if you see one of those, it's like, okay, I know they're for real now.
Yeah.
And
a lot of the people that we've spoken to and interviewed, specifically like Bigfoot witnesses, they'll tell you, especially ones that have no, you know, intention of going out to look for Bigfoot, because now it's a pretty popular hobby now, you know, with TV shows, popularity,
right,
and things
right.
like that. But they're, you know, prior to that, people were just hikers or whatever, and that still happens. But you hear them say things like, you know, there it was, and you're standing there looking at an 8-foot-tall hairy creature, and it's not supposed to be there. You know, that's what they always say. It's like, I all this rush came over you where I'm looking at something that doesn't exist, and yet there it is right in front of me. And so you have the fear of a giant ape-like creature standing there near you, which would probably be, you know, frightening. You know, coming across a couple of grizzlies in Alaska was kind of, for us, it was a sort of, oh, that must be what it's like to see something like that. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we saw some fairly large grizzlies, luckily, from either a distance or from a vehicle or something like that. But I can't imagine what it would be to, we knew there was going to be bears there, so for somebody that's hiking to all of a sudden come across something that they had no idea would even existed to be all of a sudden there.
Well, you hinted around about things that you went and saw when you were in Alaska. No, I've never been there, and I'd like to go someday. And you told me quite a bit. Do you want to go into all that? Talk about the trip that
you went? Sure, the Alaska trip? Yeah.
I don't know. Did we ever cover the Mayan trip at all?
That's what we're trying to figure out, is when was the last time we talked. Every year we do one big theme trip, and we did, in 2012, we did a Mayan 2012 crystal skull type theme trip, where we went down to Belize and Guatemala and went to a lot of the Mayan ruins and went to the one temple where the Indiana Jones crystal skull story sort of originated from.
Oh, yeah, okay.
There was supposedly a crystal skull found at this one location, so we went and actually saw the spot where it was said to be found. And if you get into the crystal skulls, it's tied to aliens and everything. You dig into it, and that's a whole another.
It was created by somebody. I mean, they've been around for thousands of years, right? And somebody with an amazing technology created those. And from what I understand of the crystal skulls is that, I mean, we can't really prove it maybe, but that these are, they can be used to help us become more enlightened, perhaps. There's something about their technology, and maybe at one time they were used for that, but it was, I've heard that they've been like a gift from another race, another being, groups from another place.
Just like all these other stories, you'll have everyone say, oh, that's a hoax, and no, you know, I saw this show that proved it, this and that. And so even aside from all that, you know, whether some of the skulls were man-made or otherwise made, the idea of if you strip it down to the quartz supposedly is a very good recording type material. So, you know, like inside tapes and things like that, they use it. So it supposedly can hold memory. So if you think about that, if it holds energy, I've heard stories about how they were used to basically be a recording device, that some beings at some point put in the energy or memories,
mm-hmm.
and then you
right.
record. You know, so what you're getting from them when you meditate with them is energy from that. So you can go all down a bunch of different paths with it, but there's a group that does these crystal, actually it was right before the 2012 thing, they were doing a bunch of meditations with the crystal skulls, and there were some pretty cool stories coming out of that of what people were seeing. And so if anybody's interested, I would you know, Google crystal skulls, and there's a lot of interesting information about it. But so that trip was pretty cool, just being down in the jungle and going into caves and seeing footprints in the mud inside caves from, you know, the Mayans, and it was spectacular just as a historic trip as well, and seeing some of the, you know, like the ruins in Tikal, Guatemala, and amazing.
Did you go to any of the pyramids or anything like that?
Yeah, the one in Tikal is pretty spectacular, and then there was couple of the ones, like where the crystal skull one was found at Lubuntun, smaller temples, but you get up on top of some of the ones that they're, certain ones they've blocked off because, you know, how people are, they want to take a picture or something. And the one guide that we had with us was telling us about a person that fell off of one of these, and they just, you can imagine those stone steps that are, you know, go on and on and on,
mm-hmm.
just bouncing. Said this person just, you could see him, the crowd that was below just watched this person just, you can't stop, just all the way, and didn't make it. But So a lot of them, the bigger ones or the more popular, they keep you from some of the more, like the one in Tikal actually rope off so you can't. But it's pretty scary. You're there and there's all these military guys with machine guns, and you know, and then the guide was telling us stories of growing up and, you know, needing to hide in the basement or like in dugouts to avoid being shot. And you know, Guatemala is
unstable. Yeah.
So it was just learning about the culture was interesting. In itself.
And in the fact that it's been so unstable in a lot of those areas for so long makes you wonder. Now, what do you think in your own, because there's pyramids all over the world. Isn't that amazing how they're, you know, why would this be everywhere? You know, even in this country, they found what they believe are old.
Yeah, there's, you know, I've heard different things on that. I wouldn't say I'm an expert on it by any means because I haven't dug into it too much, but yeah, is it a coincidence of architecture for time? But I don't know. It seems like it's too coincidental for cultures that most likely did not communicate with one another, how they had similar technology or similar architectural patterns and things. Pyramid being one of them, and just from Atlantis to the Egyptians and the Mayans and, like you're saying, even ones locally. So it's a fascinating thing. If I could dig into all these things and be an expert on all of it, I would love it. But
what is your theory on it, Mike? You can have theories on this show. We don't have to prove them exactly.
My theory on it, I'm probably like most people that are into this sort of thing and would imagine that it was probably some alien type technology or, you know, pattern or previous race that was able to communicate between places. I don't know, it makes sense to me.
I've had, you know, over the years, different people I've talked to, and one woman said she had a vision and it went back to a previous lifetime. And I don't know if you and I have talked about reincarnation. I'm guessing we might have. But she saw herself in front of one of these pyramids walking into the town. And she said the vision she had, well, first of all, in the first vision she had, she was being shown how to, through some kind of harmonic vibration, vocalized, they could raise stone, a group of people. And I think that's maybe how these pyramids were built. There's no way I believe that they rolled them and lifted these huge rocks, you know. Mm-hmm. I think there was a technology that's used that we forgot. Like that man down in Florida City, Florida. I think you and I have talked about that as well. How did he move all those things in there?
And oh, so, the Coral Castle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she says she saw them, she was being taught as a child how to raise the rocks. Now then, she had another vision, and she was older, and she was walking back into the city, and she said the pyramids were used to light the city, among more than one thing. But she said that they were a way to harness energy, and they used it to light up the city.
Hmm.
Have you heard that before? No?
No, that I haven't heard.
And I've watched some of the, who's the fellow from, is it Germany, Austria? Erich von, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, can't think of his name. I know exactly who you're talking
Chariots
about.
Chariots of the Gods?
Yes, yep, mm-hmm.
And he talked about, you know, that they used him to power that. And one of the pyramids, there's like a drawing of what looks like a light bulb, you know? I don't know. It's interesting, though. It's fascinating. And I think, well, why not? Why could they not be energy centers and also maybe a way to communicate with other beings from another planet?
Right.
Because they're lined up in a certain direction, it seems like. They always point a certain way.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the Coral Castle, you know, he did a bunch of alignment type things with his things. The Egyptians obviously did.
Didn't he claim to uncover, I thought I read an article, and maybe it's not true, that he claimed he uncovered that secret of how to move things with his mind?
I think that's what, I don't remember the exact story. I know he was building it supposedly for some woman that he loved and was,
right,
you know, but I think that's what the story was, and no one, you know, I think that was the story of what, because he obviously kept it a secret because no one saw him do it or anything like that, but I think that's what it was, you know, and that's the thing with the alignments, you know, was it something that was used, you know, Stonehenge, all those things are, was it for a communication type purpose, was it something to alignment with outer planets and the stars, or, you know, who knows what, I wish we did, but...
Energy fields, I think, too, I think some of it is,
yep.
Could be lined
well,
up.
Well, I mean, I think we talked about it the last time, there was that place that our team went to in Colorado where there was supposedly a vortex. And
where was that you went?
It was at the UFO Watchtower. In,
yeah! I just interviewed that lady.
Judy?
Yeah!
Yeah, she's great, isn't she?
This is weird because I don't even remember us talking about it, and I just interviewed her 2 weeks ago. What are the odds of that, Mike?
Well, it is a small world.
You don't think there's any?
How is she doing? We were there in 2008, and then I lost touch with her. I mean, kept up with her for a few years after, but hadn't sent anything. But we stayed with her for. Few days and stayed at her place, and she showed us some pictures of things that have been seen there, and but anyway, there's a vortex there on our
yep,
on the
that's
property.
That's what she told me. Yeah,
and she didn't say we actually were in the one area prior to when she was telling us about this, and for me, I actually at one point I'd left because they have this area where there's people leave things. You know, travelers come through and you leave a penny that's in your pocket or, you know, a little toy that you got laying in your car or something. You know, just some kind of symbol that you were there. So we were kind of walking around it, looking at all these different things and little messages that people left. And I started feeling really nauseous and I typically don't get that way. I'm healthy enough, knock on wood. But... I was this guy, I'm going to go over there and sit down. And as soon as I walked away from it, I was fine. And then later, she was actually telling us that was one of the areas. And the other one was inside this dome sort of office space that she has where people will come in. And she has things in there to show you and sell you and all that sort of thing and just register to camp there. And she let us sleep in there the one night. And I was like, okay, where's the one spot that, you know, the psychics are telling you the vortex is, because I'm going to sleep there. So I slept on the spot with my sleeping bag, and Brad, the one guy that travels with us, slept out on the observation deck because he wanted to see the stars, so he stayed up all night just watching the sky. The rest of us slept inside. And I had the most bizarre dream I've ever had in my life.
Really?
It felt so real, and it was one of those outer body experience type dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, in the dream, woke up, got up out of my sleeping bag, walked just a little ways away, and was looking down at myself sleeping.
Really?
And then all of a sudden, there was a fight between a tiger and a lion. And I was trying to protect the two people. I don't know. It gets kind of weird from there. But you know, eventually I just woke up because it was just too overwhelming. And something, it woke me up. And so I didn't go back to sleep at that spot. But I was wondering, you know, if there are any of your listeners are into dream things, I'd love to have them email me and talk to me about it. Because it was, you know, I have no idea, one, the tiger was on our side and... was helping us protect us from this lion. I don't know. But the fact that it was so clear and so real, lifelike, the dream, that I wonder if it had something to do with that spot that I was sleeping.
That's
interesting to me, too.
I have no doubt that it did. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, there's a book called Animal Speak.
Mm-hmm.
You ever hear of that one?
No, but does it have to do with, your animal spirit?
Yes, it tells whatever animals come to you. A lot of times, you know, and I've checked it so many times with animals that I see, usually when I'm awake, and it's just really seems to make a lot of sense. So, as far as like you battling, having a lion and a tiger battling, you said?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just wonder if there's that's a representation of energies battling, because we know, I'm sure you have, well, you ran into a darker energy when you were in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
that there are, I think there are those that are in spirit that maybe aren't in light. I'm not calling them evil, but I'm just saying that there are those that are not of the light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is the light, the beings of the light. So maybe that's part of what was going on that you were seeing in your dream, witnessing that. Because that is, and it's really not a battle. As from what I know of investigating these things, is that darkness wants nothing to do with the light. Matter of fact, you know, they talk about in the Bible that there's going to be a battle, and it's like there's going to be no battle. When true light shows up, darkness leaves. It's just that simple. It doesn't want to be anything aware around the light, because then it becomes part of it. So you wouldn't want to become part of that if you still choose to be in the darkness. That's just my two cents on it. So maybe that's part of what you were picking on. You were in a very, you know, a place where I think you're... if I, you know, and I believe Judy on this too, because she told me about, I think your awareness was heightened, and your your ability, your psychic abilities were heightened as well, probably. She told me there's a couple of spirits guarding that vortex. Did she tell you that?
She, you know, I don't remember if she did tell us that. Did she say something about the vortexes when you were interviewing her?
Yeah, she told me about the rock garden. There's a vortex there. People have actually gone in there and healed. I just had her on a couple of weeks ago. And she said that the aliens actually, she went to a psychic and she told me that the aliens were a little bit upset with her. And she goes, why are they upset with me? She says, because, you know, she was told by this psychic, and the psychic knew nothing about her, but just told her, you know, this medium was doing readings for everybody. And she said, well, because you haven't represented the 155 different groups that exist. And she goes, well, how am I supposed to know that? You know, and they wanted to dress her aliens in different clothing, too, that she has out there. I don't know if you saw those, if those were there when you were there.
No.
Yeah, she's got a couple of aliens out there that are, you know, figures that she put up, and they want her to keep changing the clothing on them. It's like, I said to Judy, I said, well, why don't they pay for the clothing? Or they can just come do it. I mean, middle of the night, boom, nobody even know, you know. So Judy's got a sense of humor. She knows how to, you know, take it in stride.
Yeah, I don't mean to joke about this stuff. I do try to bring a little bit of, not humor, but just good, lighthearted, because I don't want anybody to think I'm so serious about this that I don't think logically about other things, and that it's the only thing I think about. That's one thing that, you know, we try to, when we're traveling and interviewing people, we definitely don't judge, because we've heard stories that,
mm-hmm.
you know, most people would just start laughing almost. But you have to, you don't know what's real, you don't know what people have experienced, and you just gotta have to have an open mind and listen. So I don't mean to joke about things. It's just, we have fun with it, though. It's, you know, traveling's fun, meeting people is fun. Like, talking to people like you is great. So it's, I'm only just kind of kidding.
Well, you know, what I find too, Michael, is that I get to know these people a little bit, and I, you know, I'm not going to buy everything they say, but I'm never going to put them in an uncomfortable position. But once I get to know them a little bit, I get them to loosen up. And most of them have a sense of humor, because I'm sure they've been laughed at for a long time. And I really like the fact that, you know, be able to talk to guests, they can laugh about some things. Because nothing in life, no matter how serious we think it is, I believe, is that serious. Because we're all going to be in spirit someday. And if you're in spirit, you're probably looking back and going, you know, it's not that big of a deal over there. It's really not.
Yeah, it's crazy, especially when you get into cryptozoology world. We've met people and we'll go to places with them to interview them and talk to them, and they're, you know, the waiter will come over and they, you know, if you're in a restaurant, and they're, okay, don't say anything when I'm, because I don't want them to know, because I'll, you know, they'll, if they know at work that I talk about this, blah, blah, blah. And I find that very hard to believe, because it's, you know, I think about me, if someone were to Google me, I have a professional life. I'm a graphic designer and work at a place. And I think about when we're hiring people, or you know, some nieces and nephews that are applying to college and thinking about how much information is out there on people, and when people out of context Google you and find out things. And I kind of have to laugh because it's like you Google me and you know, Bigfoot stories come up. And mm-hmm. So I can't even imagine what if someone in the business world Googles me looking for information, what they might see. So I'm just open about it. I figure you can't hide it. So even, you know, go to places and like you said, as soon as you start talking to people and opening up, sure enough, here comes more stories. You know, people that you never would right. guess would tell you a story. There they are telling you their ghost story or how they saw, you know, some strange light in the sky or whatever it is. But so I've just decided to have fun with it, be open about it. Question everything, have an open mind, all that sort of thing.
You know, I look at it too this way. My intent is always for the best and never to hurt anybody. It's always done for the right reasons, the highest good. And I've had more than one psychic who's been on with me say that she checked with her angels or the spirits before she came on, and she said, they said good things about you, so I have no problem coming on with you. And I think that, you know, that's the energy I put out in the universe. I'm really doing this to help promote others, but also to have a show and maybe find some answers. And it's never done to manipulate or, you know, to hurt anybody in any way. It never would be that way. So you took this trip to Alaska, and I want to hear about, because you and I were talking about some of the really cool things that you kind of came across and some of the legends you heard about. Do you want to share some of that, Mike?
Yeah, this was another trip of a lifetime. And first of all, the coolest thing about it was the last state that I needed to go to. So I've now been to all 50 states, which was kind of a fun thing to also accomplish on that trip. But it was so much fun. We flew into Anchorage and we rented an RV and just traveled all over the place. And there was a group, a paranormal group, had actually heard about us and wanted to be our like host. So we got up to Fairbanks and it was just, they had Jeeps. So we went up to above the Arctic Circle, looking for a lair pack, or there's different names. There's these little people that live in, it's basically little people that live in the tundra. I'm trying to think what the other name I heard, because there's some creatures. I was trying to describe them to you. There's one version of these little people that bush pilots will see on flyovers that have like seal skin or sort of native, you know, clothing that they have in their, you know, because it's obviously cold. So they're running around in that. And then the other version is a small Bigfoot, you know, hairy creature, again, living in the, you know, above the Arctic Circle, but out in the tundra. And no real good evidence other than people saying they've seen them. And most of them are pilots, because that area up there is just so just rugged, and not a lot of people up that way anyway. So any sightings of them are very few and far between, but very, very interesting. So we spent some time looking into that. I've been trying to put together a list of all the little people legends around, you know, from leprechauns to the Nain Rouge in Detroit that I think I talked about last time. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my favorites. And so Alaska was cool for that. There's obviously some Bigfoot sightings there. So we went to an area known for Bigfoot sightings. Didn't see anything, saw plenty of bears, but no Bigfoot. What else? The one I was telling you about, there's a creature, it's a sea creature. So it's a native legend that the elders would tell the kids not to go too close to the edge of the ice, because this creature it's sort of a mermaid, evil mermaid kind of creature, you know, mostly woman, lower body, sort of, you know, with a fin, that type of thing. Very much like a mermaid. And supposedly she has this basket, and she will reach up and grab the kids and take the kids down, and the kids are never to be seen. So it's one of those that I'm sure it was just probably never a real sighting, but, you know, some kid, I'm sure, at one point or another fell into the water and disappeared, so they didn't want other kids to do it, and that's how I'm sure how that story.
Or there could be some truth to it.
There could be some truth to it. There are plenty of weird sea creatures, and
you've seen you've seen some things that a lot of people wouldn't believe, right?
Say that again.
You've seen some things that a lot of people wouldn't believe.
Yeah, and heard plenty of stories of things that people, you know, even if I didn't see it. So yeah, maybe there is something, you know, maybe there's, you know, there's not a lot of exploration that's been done in super depths. I mean, we were talking earlier about the, how the fish, you know, the warmth of the seas and stuff and having the fish patterns, travel patterns being different. And so some of these larger creatures are coming up to feed and we're starting to learn more about giant squid and different sharks and all that. So we're just going to keep finding new things, I think, as the climate changes. And
now you look at a lot of these things from a scientific viewpoint, and you seem like that kind of guy. But also, I mean, there are things that are kind of spirit.
Yeah.
And I know you've seen and dealt with spirits. And well, my understanding of like some of these from the spirit world, they have the ability to show up and then not be here. Like they come and go. Like they open a doorway. Have you investigated anything like that?
Well, what's interesting, you know, I go back to Bigfoot, my favorite topic, and talk about that. Because there's a lot of people that believe that Bigfoot is not an actual ape creature. It's that it's a being, whether it's alien or from another dimension type thing, that can just show up here and then disappear. And that's why, you know, you'll see tracks that a line of tracks that just go off into nowhere and then just that's it. You know, you can't follow them anymore. Or why you can see them at one point and not others, or why, you know, all that stuff. So I think the combination of all these things is what fascinates me the most is, yes, there's creatures that we don't know exist that exist. Pandas and all those other animals. Oh, no, they don't exist. But natives always said, oh, yeah, they do. And sure enough, somewhere down the line, someone finds one. And all of a sudden, they're in a zoo. So, you know, is that to say that everything that you hear from these remote villages that they say, you know, like the Ring Pendek villagers say that they see them, the little creature that's sort of ape-like. They don't have evidence other than a few footprint casts, but plenty of sightings from people that live in those jungles. So there's that. And then you get into the area like we were just talking about from the spirit world. Is that connected? Is it? And I think we touched this last time. It probably is all connected. I mean, it seems like it makes sense that, you know, if we're here and all these other things are there, if you have an open mind and think that that's the truth, then why wouldn't they be all connected?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I told you the last time I talked to you. Now, maybe you're going to want to come to Wilson, Michigan, where I live, and do your next investigation. I'm sure you'll be setting that up right now as we speak. But I took a picture a few years ago in my backyard, just taking a picture by the apple trees, and then later I noticed there was like a guy standing there.
Huh.
And, you know, I figured he was just a ghost from another time period. And I've had some friends that become really good friends of mine, medium psychic type people, that have told me that I have a vortex in my yard and that there's a lot of tree spirit type beings that come around me in that property. Well, a couple summers ago, I was laying on my couch and I was taking a nap, and it was a nice day, but I was just a little tired, and I heard a knock at the door, and I wasn't sure if I was awake or not, and nobody was there. And then shortly after that, within a month, knocked on the door again. And of course, I live out in the country, so there's no way, you know, I guess it's not impossible, but it would be pretty hard for somebody to run off my deck. I would hear that, for one.
Yeah.
And run down my driveway, or wherever they would run. And so this time I heard it, and I was awake. I was wide awake. And I went, and I checked, and there was nothing there. And so this is when some psychic mediums have told me that you have some earthbound spirits, including maybe some little people kind of hanging around my place. And some people might be afraid of that, but I think it's part of, you know, it's part of the connection. When you live out in the country, you know, people say that they see fairies. You know, I'm sure there's that kind of thing going on everywhere. And so I definitely have something going on. I had two branches pulled down from this area where I thought the vortex was. Two branches pulled down from a tree, and I thought, well, maybe a Sasquatch did this. Now, they were old branches, and but there was no wind, and these branches were laid side by side, pointing in a parallel direction, kind of towards where we thought the direction of the vortex was. That was just totally weird. And I thought, now, how did that happen? How did these two branches get pulled off the apple tree and laid almost side by side? Do Sasquatches do that kind of thing?
Well, there is a lot of talk about Sasquatch tree, you know, bending and breaking and all that. I'm not sure so much about it. I mean, there's that type of thing. There's so, you know, coincidence could be the main reason.
Right, for certainly could be possible.
You know, but a lot of this tree type things that you see that people are, you know, they're going to hike and, oh, this is definitely a Sasquatch. It's like, well,
I hear you.
if there's that many tree structures that are being built, you'd think we'd see more. So I don't want to get too, like, oh, yeah, everything that you see like that.
No, and I definitely believe that something, let me put it this way, something was trying to get my attention because these were huge branches that had to be basically torn off and placed. Now, the odds of them falling down off the tree and landing in a parallel, I couldn't even tell where they came from off the tree, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I saw where one of the
I would think that, you know, with all the things you're describing, that it's probably more likely something else, if it's not just a natural occurrence, than a Sasquatch, just because of all the other things you have going on, that it's, you know, could be the energy like you're talking about, which could pull things down, and that's maybe why it landed in a certain way, or, you know, it's interesting. It's cool that you don't have to go anywhere like I do. You don't have to travel. You just got your backyard and do investigations.
There's a lot of things in this, in the upper Michigan, you know, you and I were talking about this before the interview. The man wolf, that I believe I've heard more than one story about that. And I'm guessing, who did you talk to about that? Did you interview anybody?
Well, we did talk, is it Linda Godfrey?
Linda Godfrey.
Yeah, we met her at one point and talked to her, and then there's another woman that's a friend of hers that we talked to. But we actually went on the one trip. We were in Michigan, and we were up near, is it Copemish and Cadillac up north of there, and where there's been some sightings, and went. And we actually, this again is one of those things where it's that you find something and you... So we found some canine tracks that were pretty big. I mean, it could have been done by a dog, but we're in this area that my brother owns some hunting land up that way. And so we were in there, and he's like, I never see dogs around here running around. So it was either a huge coyote, or I don't know if the wolves are starting to get down to the lower peninsula.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. They're certainly in upper Michigan, but they'd have to cross the bridge and pay the toll.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they do that.
You don't think they had the toll money?
No, probably not.
We saw a wolf when we were in the upper peninsula on that trip. We saw one just right on the side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty spectacular to see. But so I don't know, you know, if whatever dog, wolf that put this, it was a big one. And, you know, the stories you hear, they're more... It's sort of a wolf man creature.
Right.
So, but if there's wolves there, maybe it's just that when I was in Transylvania and was in the area where this village where the people have actually in the 1990s left the village because they feared they were being tormented by a werewolf or werewolves. So in that particular part of Romania, from what I heard, is the most the highest population of wolves, wild wolves, and anywhere. And so are they related, or is it just people seeing wolves in strange scenarios that might cause that? I don't know, but maybe that's the same thing going on in Michigan.
Yeah.
I always try to, you know, explain it some way, because Brad, who travels with us, our little skeptic travels.
You're a little skeptic.
Yeah, he's always correcting me on things. So I try not to just, oh, yeah, that's definitely what it is. It's, you know, there's a werewolf there and running around in the woods of Michigan. But there are some, you know, a lot of that one story or film was definitely proved as a hoax. I think it was from the 70s, about the Michigan Dog Man or Wisconsin. Mm. So I don't, but you do hear stories. So.
Oh, yeah. You hear them, and we've heard, you know, and Linda, last time I talked to her, she talked about some people that saw one at a campsite not far from here, not actually that far from where I go camping. So it makes you think,
Yeah.
But none of these things have ever attacked anybody that I know of. She said they easily could. They just kind of try to scare you away from them. At least that's her experience with it.
But I think this kind of goes to, it just hit me, and I should say this because I always tend to get way off track, because you start one thing and I'll go down a path and I'll know, oh yeah, this story, that story. But I would say that that's the one thing that I'm most fascinated with, is the storytelling aspect of it, and the whole, you know, is there something there that, or isn't, and are people do they have an open mind and want to talk about it? So that's the part that gets me all excited, and that's probably why I get off track, because if you want to start talking about another thing or hearing about Alaska, I can tell you to talk about that. If you want to hear about Transylvania, I'll talk about that. But so what I should do, though, is kind of explain what is happening with Believe It Tour and what we're trying to focus on. And,
yeah, that's probably and actually, a good
idea. You know, the idea of, so Believe It Tour started out of an idea that I wanted to push for myself to explore some of these things and create something with it. So that started in 2008. I had, prior to that, was running a couple little companies that sold T-shirts and things like that, for mostly Bigfoot related. And that was back from the mid-90s when I first went up to Northern California. So everything just sort of grew and then expanded. And where we are at now with it is, we're going to take all the merchandise, the online stores that we have, and all the travel and education. We started getting so spread out that we decided to refocus. And we're going to focus, we're going to have our merchandise thing, because still people seem to like some of the things that we do. So we're going to split that off and have one company, which is going to be called Googs & Co. And that's Googs as in googly eye, because if anybody recognizes my creatures that I always draw for our blog, my little drawing style, I have one small eye and one big eye, and everybody always kind of make fun of me for drawing googly-eyed creatures. So we're going to do that and have all the merchandise just live there. Then Believe It Tour, the travel aspect of that is going to go away, and we're going to put that under a company called Bright Yellow. And Bright Yellow, what Bright Yellow is going to be, is an education company that we're going to try to still travel and document things and do all that, but the end result is to try to get kids, groups, adults, families around the world to share their local legends with people online, eventually getting it to the point where we could, I'm hoping, connect kids physically from one place to another. Because as we've traveled all over the world and you go into these places and find that kids on, we went to Bimini, a little island, and
right. The
you know, for the, mm-hmm. the last city of lost city of Atlantis, and Bimini Roads there, and Bermuda Triangle, all that. So we went out there, and you get around in golf carts because there's no need to have a car there; it's so small. Those kids there, we spent a week there, and I taught some. There's a little art school, so they wanted me to teach some art to the kids, and I said in exchange for them teaching me about local legends. So we had all these kids all week long telling us all these stories. And they just wanted to know, what are the kids in other places that we've traveled, what are they doing? What do they know? What are they interested in? And because those kids, most of them said, yeah, we'll probably, you know, if we're lucky, we'll go to Miami someday. But most likely, you know, the older people we talked to never left an island. So we thought from there, it's like, God, this would be great to be able to have those kids share their stories with groups around the world so they can become friends, you know, sort of a pen pal type thing.
Well, not only that, but it's, you know, what I see with, like, with Skyping and talking to people around the world. Actually, this earlier today, I was at an event. We have a golfing event around here, and up here, you know, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, but they brought in these lady golfers, and this is like a step below. They're pros, but it's like the junior league, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I talked to a woman from Colombia, and I talked to another woman from South Africa, and you just see, like, the world is connecting, and I think this is the way we're meant to go, is to all be connected to each other, because at our core, I really believe we're all the same. We're all the beings of light. And so we keep the separation, and that's what divides us. And I think it's awesome that you're going to bring them together, because then we're going to realize, hey, they're just like us.
Yep. Well, that's the goal, is to create global friendships and with a hope of all the crazy stuff you see in the news. You know, if you... I'm convinced that traveling is the best education anyone can ever experience.
Okay.
I was lucky enough to travel quite a bit when I was younger. And, you know, when you see things in the news, it's like, oh, I've been there. Those people were nice. You know, why are they fighting? That kind of thing. So this is sort of we're bringing what we do out to a bigger public, for a bigger cause, but all along the lines of, like I mentioned at the beginning of this talk, me as a kid, like, loving the campfire story. So that's what the bright yellow name comes from, the glow of a campfire. That most stories going back in time were told sitting around a fire.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're kind of branching from that and saying that storytelling is back and strong as ever. The internet has just created a new way to do it, and we're going to try to bring old world legends, new legends, local legends on a local regional type basis, and make it available to everyone. So that's where we're going with that. So we're still going to travel, still going to do the investigations and things so that we can be knowledgeable about the thing, but in doing so, we want to meet with teachers, we want to meet with just local groups as we go and set things up. So everywhere we've gone so far, we've got contacts from just meeting great people.
Now, do you make a living? I mean, do you get sponsored? Can you make money doing your tour? I mean, how do you?
Well, up to this point, it was mostly self-funded. We'd have sort of fundraiser type things going on from time to time, like the Mayan trip. We did a really fun thing where I sculpted a little skull, and what we did is had a fundraiser where people could send in, if they made a donation of any kind, send in text or anything digital. I took all that information from people that donated, put it on a chip, and then embedded it in a clear resin version of the skull. So basically made a crystal skull time capsule. And when we went down to, I made two of them, and there's one in the jungles of Guatemala, and there's one in the jungles of Belize right now that I'm sure someday someone will find it. But I got to a place where it was so thick in the jungle, and then we just threw it in this as far as into the jungle as we could. So I have no idea even where they landed. So we didn't bury them or anything. Everything down there grows. You know, you put down a backpack, and the next morning it's over the jungle. It's there. So that kind of, those, we do those things, but they definitely don't. I put a lot of my own money into this, but mm-hmm. what we're trying to do with this, we're going to create a nonprofit from it and look for grants and try to focus more on this, because we feel that it's a valuable thing. Idea of creating those global friendships should be a good cause. So
absolutely,
that's what we're going to do.
I think that's awesome. I think you're doing great work, and the part also that you're going out and having fun like a kid, like the rest of us want to do. It's like, I think that's awesome. Now, real quick, we got a little more time. You want to talk about Champ Camp at all?
Sure. So Champ Camp, which is another evolutionary type thing. We started that, I think it was 2009, and we go up to Lake Champlain and do a weekend-long camp, all based on the theory of, or the theme of Champ, the lake monster that supposedly lives in Lake Champlain. So it started out where we were teaching, we'd have families come, and the whole, it was open to the public, and kids would come, and we'd teach green camping techniques and water ecology and just fun stuff, that educational things, but all had some sort of Champ theme. Over the years, it turned into more of a research project. So this year, we actually, it's now going to be under bright yellow. It's not open to the public, and there's five of us that are going up, and we're going to be there for close to a week this time. And we've developed some new technology. Bill, the one guy on the team, he works in the surveillance industry, and he basically is amazing with any kind of technology. So we actually developed some underwater cameras and hydrophones that will sit below the surface and shoot up, because as we've had in the past where we've tried to photograph, you know, underwater cameras you can get and you look out, but Lake Champlain's a little murky, so you can only see so far, and you know, you get pictures of perch swimming by or whatever. But what we're going to do is use the sunlight looking up, so if any silhouettes go over these time-lapse cameras that we'll have down under the water for long periods of time, we'll capture it. And there's some echolocation theories that have been recorded in the lake that shouldn't be there, so we're going to try to capture some of those ourselves. And we're going to do it. Diana is a microbiologist by education. She's got her degree in microbiology, so she's going to instruct us on how to do this in a very scientific approach way. We're going to be documenting everything and getting from water samples to depths and locations, and so that if we do come up with any kind of evidence, we'll have scientific data to go along with it. So it's a very serious approach to this. It's not going to be like, I don't know if you guys saw, I was on a National Geographic Champ episode. They had a monster project, they called it. And it was, you know, I was on there, we were doing some research, but talk about lighthearted. It sort of poked a little fun at it. So I guess it was still good, because if a kid was watching, it might get interested in cryptozoology. But we're going to definitely take a little different approach and try to document everything scientifically, in the hopes of any evidence that we gather will be taken a little more seriously.
And those of you that maybe, and I'm guessing most people that listen to my show, they already know this, but Lake Champlain has been an area where what they call Champ, which is a prehistoric water being, I guess.
Lake monster.
Has been spotted for a long time. And even when you were there, you said you spotted something. Didn't you tell me that last time you spotted something?
Yeah, the one year we had a time-lapse camera on the surface that was shooting out over the lake for one entire day, taking photos every 10 seconds. And one frame that we have, the unfortunate thing is so far off in distance that, you know, I'm definitely not going to say, oh, that's Champ. But I took the frame before it, frame after it, and all the, you know, frames before and after it, and there was nothing else in that. So it wasn't, you know, in other instances, if there's something in the frame, the other frames previous or after it, there'd be, you know, the thing moving. So basically like a bird flying by or whatever. So whatever it was didn't come in from the sides or from the top. It must have come in from underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And The other thing I did was in Photoshop, I took that frame and a frame that was earlier in the day or later in the day that had a kayaker out in the same general location, definitely in the same distance, and overlaid them. And the height of this black blob, to give it the best description, was basically the same height as what you would see a kayaker from, you know, waist mm-hmm. up to their head sitting in a kayak.
So whatever this was sticking out of the water a couple of feet at least, right?
Yes. So had it been, you know, maybe a large fish jumping, could have been. But it was cool. It was one of those things where, you zoom in on Photoshop and you'd see the pixels, but the shape of it was, I'll send you a...
You know what I think it was, Mike?
What?
Sasquatch yeah. jumping out of the water.
Sasquatch, yeah.
He's being chased by. Being chased by a dog man, by the way.
Yeah, but Whitehall, New York, right there in same area on the New York side of Lake Champlain. Lots and lots of Sasquatch sightings there. So
yeah, we have a lot of them up here too. People don't talk about it too much, but over the years, I've heard a lot of them, and all over. So I'm guessing these things, wherever there's any kind of remote wilderness, and like we speculated, if they can come and go, and they don't have to stay here, then they could wind up anywhere where it's wooded,
Yep. Well, I'll leave you with one theory that I heard from someone, and could be the answer, and it's probably the most fun one for a Sasquatch, is this person said to me that they are alien beings, and this is where they like to come for vacation. So they come here, and they like the woods and stuff like that. So they come in somehow through a portal or whatever and stay for a short time, and then they disappear.
Hmm.
So there you go. So maybe we're just a vacation home for.
Could be. Could be for other beings as well. Let me ask you real quick before you go. Have you ever heard about that incident in Russia? About those students, those college students that were attacked, some people believe, by Yetis? In 1952, maybe?
Was it students? I remember there's one story from probably the same time that there was in Russia of an attack like that. Don't remember much detail about it, but yeah, in British Columbia, there are some stories of, people being abducted or taken into a cave by a Yeti or a Bigfoot and held captive for a short time.
Yeah, I've never heard of people getting killed by, all these reports I've heard over the years, but this was actually a fairly well-known incident, and it took place in Siberia, and they had like a show, a documentary, where a guy went over there and he was with this woman, Russian reporter. Of course, it wasn't a documentary because they made it all exciting and everything. Oh, we're going to go in the woods here and we're going to try to steer him up. And it's like, come on, really? But the report was that these, I don't know if it's 9 students, they found them all ripped to pieces, torn apart, and they had, there's even footage where it looked like they maybe had captured something on film. What I found interesting about this is that one of the people who they had interviewed, he was the lone survivor because he left early. He said when they found these people, there were military bags or things that were left behind. He said, we had none of that stuff. So that tells you, he said, that the KGB got there before the rescue parties did. Now, what did they have to do with it? And that's where I think perhaps, I don't think Yeti took the lives of these people. I think there's some kind of military thing that was going on that may have been what they wandered into. That's my theory, because I've never heard a story, and maybe it's happened, about Sasquatch or even Dogman or Manwolf hurting us. It seems like they like to scare the heck out of us, but they don't.
Yeah.
They could easily destroy us if they wanted to.
No, most of the stories I've heard and come across are curiosity type experiences.
With the Sasquatch, but not so much the man wolf. Those ones I've heard, according to Linda, they are kind of a scary little critter, or big critter. But nobody, she said in all the research she did, there was a guy in Canada, I think she said one time, this thing tried to scare him away. It kind of took a swipe at him. It wasn't trying to hit him, and it accidentally cut him. She said, if it wanted to, it could have torn him to pieces, but it didn't do that. So I think they kind of like don't want to surround him. And so, you know, people have said Sasquatch has thrown rocks at him and things like that. So who knows? We're just going to send you to all these places. How's that?
I'll go.
I'd go with you, too. I was going to ask if you had a paying position, because I'll go with you, too.
Well, you know, if we can set something up for us in Michigan, we'll do it. This bright yellow horse up there somehow. If you have teachers or educators, you want to do something, I think that'd be a fun,
cool,
a fun thing. I'd like to get back to Michigan. And like I said, I grew up there, so love to start something.
There's a lot of strange things here as well. And I'm sure, you know, I've interviewed a fellow from Pennsylvania, and he's done a lot of investigations, mostly regarding Bigfoot and UFO and Kecksburg incident and those kind of things. But there's a lot of strange things all over the place. It's like, wow, you never know. Well, it's really a nice chatting with you, Michael. Where are you going next? Any idea?
Champ Camp.
That's going to be the next
thing. A month from now. So we're gearing up for that. We're getting all the camera gear ready and all the hydrophones. And there's an investigator, one of our team members coming up from Florida that spent 17 years on Lake Champlain, just specifically researching Champ. So he's a wealth of knowledge. And Bill from Virginia is coming up. And then we have Jeff coming from Maine, who works for the International Cryptozoology Museum, and then myself and Diana. So, and then I guess we're having a few guests. I think Lauren Coleman from the museum's coming. He's a friend of ours. And then also Sandra Mancy, who took that famous photo of Champ. Scott knows her, one of our team members, and she has expressed interest in hanging out with us this weekend or that weekend. So that'll be fun to get some stories from her.
Well, I think it's a cool way to live life, to go do those things what you're doing. You know, I think that'd be a blast. And also the thing with the kids. What is the website we can go to?
So go to Bright Yellow, BRITE, yellow, YELLOW, .org, and you'll see the new site and all the new, the transitional things coming over from Bright Yellow. I'm sorry, from Believe It Tour. And people can contact me directly there. So if anybody wants to establish some sort of class for kids or even adults and then in a group, let me know. It'd be great, because what I want to do is pair up places. So I'm trying to find, I have a lot of contacts in different parts of the world that I'd love to connect with people in Michigan or Connecticut or wherever else I can. So find me there or Facebook, you know, same thing. Just if you facebook.com/Esordi, Esordi is my personal page. So if you like to use Facebook, you can connect with me there too.
Well, it's really a joy talking to you, Michael. And I'm glad we had this opportunity to catch up on some things, and maybe a little more down the road here, we can talk about some more things again.
Yes, definitely. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And we talked about how both of us just getting busy and busy and more busy, and but whenever you shoot me an email and we'll talk, because I always realize after, you know, as difficult as it is sometimes to schedule time, as soon as you do, you're like, oh, I'm glad I did that.
Yeah.
So this is one of those instances. I had a great time talking with you.
Same here, and I love what you're doing, and I love the stories that you have, and it's just fascinating. And you take the approach of you know, you don't walk in believing everything. You've got a very scientific approach. So I think that's cool. You know, it's good to be a skeptic. I always tell people, be a skeptic if you don't believe it. It's better to go that way than believe everything you think you hear, because That's how cults are formed. You know, people will, oh, yeah, I believe that. If you don't believe it, I don't care. You listen to my show, you don't believe it, that's fine. I'm not trying to get people to agree. But people like Michael Lasorda are out there proving some of these things with their investigating. So my hat's off to you, Mike. Thank you very much.
Great. All right. Bye, everyone.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.